to the Pop Papa Napcast episode number 94. I'm your host, TJ Deitch, the podcast that I record about parenting and kind of what's been going on in our lives here while my kids sleep. Although in this case, again, they are not sleeping. My mom is over watching them during the day like she does, and they're about to come down and sleep or relax downstairs, although I would imagine the baby, our 10-month-old or almost 11-month-old, is about to take a nap. Our 3-year-old is probably not. We had some snow today, although not a ton, and her school decided to cancel, which is fine because it's in the afternoon, and it's supposed to get worse at that point, but it's totally fine out now. It snowed for about 5 minutes, and she is not excited about missing school. So we're going to try and I'm trying to get this done, and then I'm going to go out and hang out with her for a little while because, you know, she gets pretty bummed out when school gets canceled because she loves going, loves all her friends and hanging out and the cool activities they do and all that kind of stuff. So I can understand that it bums her out. Plus, I've noticed since she started going to school, she seems less, like, starved for kid attention when she goes out or when we go out on errands, specifically places where there are a lot of other kids, like, you know, the library or, you know, even stores like Target or whatever. Before, it used to be if there was another kid around, she'd be like, oh, like, must go to them. But lately, you know, since she started school, that hasn't been as big of a deal for her, which is good because that's one of the main reasons we wanted to get her into a school, and specifically the school that she's in, is just to kind of get her with kids that are kind of similar to her or not similar, which is even better, but just that are kind of outgoing and like to learn and are curious and all that kind of stuff. So it's worked out really well. And it seems to be, you know, filling that need in her, which is awesome. As you can imagine, I mean, we're on the East Coast. There's been a lot of snow. We're supposed to get more tonight. We got more yesterday. It just never seems to end, which is kind of a bummer because I'm sick of it. But, you know, like I said before in an earlier episode, we do have a neighbor who plows our yard. He actually dropped the bill off. Not our yard. That's crazy talk. He plows our driveway because he's got a truck. And he mentioned to my wife, you know, that he would do it and how much it would cost. And we were like, yes, definitely. But we weren't sure, like, how the best way to pay him was. I haven't met him yet, so I wasn't sure about just, like, walking over and doing it. Plus, when it's bad weather, it's bad weather. But, you know, it's he actually dropped the bill off and he accepts PayPal, which is awesome. So I can just click, click, click and take care of that as soon as possible. So that's good. We do have a small frozen lake developing at the bottom of our driveway. It comes down on kind of a shallow angle, but at the very bottom, it's like a car length and a half area that's about 3 or 4 cars wide for, you know, turning around and parking in front of the garage stalls and all that kind of stuff that just kind of all collects. There's a big mountain at the end of it where the plow ends up, you know, with all the snow that Lucy loves to climb on, which is great for her, but it has cut down on our turning ability because we used to just kind of go into the yard when need be to turn around. But it also, it's collected all this water, and like anytime it gets warm enough to melt, it's just standing there. It's just standing water, and I don't know what to do with it. So I think we're going to get one of those ice scrapers. It's like kind of like a garden hoe, but it's flat, and it's like on the end of a stick just to kind of, when it's maybe just a little bit warm, scrape it up and then just chuck it. I know we'll still have melt from the mini mountain we've got going, but just anything to kind of help out in that regard, because I do get a little worried. You know, my mom comes in every day and that's where she parks, and it's kind of like an ice skating rink out there. And, you know, my wife is out there and we do go out there with the kids occasionally to play. So it's like, I want it to be safe. So hopefully we can get one of those scrapers, and by next year, it'll be better. I saw somewhere that it's going to be like 40 degrees next year, high mid 40s. I can't believe it. Sounds like a heat wave. It sounds amazing. Can't wait. As I mentioned in last week's short episode, February turned out to be a pretty rough month, and it ended with yet another rough bit of news. After I recorded and cut and posted the episode, I got a call letting me know that one of the jobs, what I usually refer to as my morning work here on the podcast or on the blog or on my photo diaries, is not going to be mine anymore. It wasn't a performance thing, I was told. It's more that the website has a group of editors that are paid kind of hourly or by their session or whatever. They work from 9 to 5, say, or whatever their thing is. And they're just paid a flat fee to kind of cover all this stuff. Usually it's in the comic side, but I was doing the movie stuff. And I guess they kind of restructured and figured out that it just made more sense to have those people who are already on the payroll do the movie posts instead of me because I was getting freelance. Now, it's good and bad. I mean, the good parts of that job were that it got me writing in the morning and I was in contact with an editor I really liked every day, which was also nice. I mean, I don't have contact with a lot of people. I'm at my computer. Occasionally, some of my friends are available to talk online, and then I see people very rarely. But so that part was more of a blow than I thought it would be. Just like, oh yeah, I'm not going to talk to him anymore. I mean, we still work at the same place, but our paths won't cross as much. But the biggest problem with all this is that it was a huge chunk of my paycheck, sometimes more than half, because that was a flat fee every single month that I would get. And then everything else is by the story. So it's just a little, that's the hardest part. I mean, do I miss rewriting stories? No, not really. I'd rather write original content or do interviews, that kind of stuff. And that's basically what this job is. But at the same time, I really, really miss that money. you know, it hasn't hit yet, and there's a little bit of a compensation, which will be nice and very generous. But it's just one of those things where it's like, man, you know, this freelancing thing for me is not very lucrative. I've gone back and forth between making pretty good money to not making very good money. And it's not a super lucrative job, unless you get gigs writing for really high-profile places. And even then, I don't know really how much you make. I do have a friend who writes for, you know, a ton of places, outlets, websites, magazines that you would recognize. But we've never talked about money, so I don't know how good it is. I would imagine it's pretty good because they have backing of some kind. And most of the other places are kind of like individual owners and that kind of thing. So that was a huge blow. And like I said, February was tough with the sickness, the snow, Jack's, you know, eating problems for a little while there, this project that my wife has been working on. And then this happened at the very end. It was a rough blow. And it happened right before my in-laws came for a visit. So it was like, I didn't mention it to them. I don't know if my wife did or not. But so I was already kind of in a bad mood. And then my wife had to work late because she still had this project on Friday. And then Saturday, she had to go into work. And then Sunday, she worked from home. And her parents left early because there was supposed to be this big snowstorm again. So all the things that have been kind of like compounding for February to be a terrible month just kept going right on through and even a little bit into March. Just, you know, the weather. My car still doesn't work. So that's an annoyance because I don't have much freedom in that regard. One positive of the week, I mean, the weekend was good because my in-laws were here and the kids love them, and so they got to hang out and all that stuff. Obviously, that's great, but it was rough just because, like, you know, Emma's working, the kids are used to being around her on the weekends. So my in-laws being here was a good help because my wife was gone and because the kids like them. But just I'm sure it wasn't a great visit for them because it was so quick. They got in, you know, they didn't see their daughter, and then they had to leave really early, like in snow and all that stuff. Meanwhile, my parents were at a family funeral over the weekend and drove back on Sunday, and they got hit hard with weather. They said it was one of the worst trips they've ever had. Sleet, snow, ice, all that kind of stuff. But they made it back fine and all that. I actually would go over and take care of their cats while they were gone. And Lucy came with me a couple times, so that was fine. But it was a weird weekend, I guess, is the best way to put it. But there were a couple, you know, shining spots. For one, we did go to the indoor flea market across the river. It's called, like, the Duchess something something. I shouldn't even act like I know what it's called. I'll post a link. If you're in kind of the Orange County, Rockland, what's above us, Ulster County areas, this is a great place, and obviously Duchess, because that's where it is. This is a great place. It's an old, like, local franchise, like, electronic-type store, like a Sears or a, you know, Best or Service, if Service? Service merchandise? Yeah, those kinds of places, or Montgomery, well, not really Montgomery word. Anyway, Elder Beerman, I guess, but with more electronics. And so it's a big building like that, and then it's just kind of broken up into little booths, and people can buy little things here and there. We usually take some cash and set a little bit aside for Lucy because she likes to get something. In this case, she got a Fluttershy My Little Pony that's probably about 6 inches tall. It's stuffed, and she really liked it. She's been getting into the ponies a lot more. She's had a few of the little ones from, like, McDonald's did them a little while ago. She's got two or three from that. And then she's gotten a couple as gifts. I think she got one as a stocking stuffer from my in-laws when we were there for Christmas. And a few things like that. So she is used to it. And as I've said in different posts and on this podcast, she has gotten into some of the kind of ponies adjacent or spin-off type things. Equestria Girls, she's a big fan of. Last week I reviewed the Adventures of the Cutie Mark Crusaders DVD, which she also really dug. So she's getting more and more into it. I thought she was going to get a Rainbow Dash because that's the one that we've talked about as being our favorite. I said it was my favorite. She's like, oh, me too. She kind of does that though. So maybe she's just saying things. But so she got that. And the place that we got it from, it was only $6, which I thought was a pretty good deal. It's actually like a collectible place, like my kind of collectibles. The neat thing about this indoor flea market is that there's a surprising amount of, like, comics and old school toys and that kind of stuff that is right up my alley. So, you know, while sometimes you go to a flea market and it's, like, a bunch of antiques, which I don't mind. I like looking at that, but I'm not going to buy anything or, you know, whatever, just older stuff or that garbage, like, dollar store type stuff, which is at this place, trust me. And I have to steer her past it every single time because I don't want her to get some, like, just awful toy from a country that doesn't care if, like, arsenic is in the lead paint. we skip all that part. But this one's neat because it's got a lot of stuff. So this collectible booth, I've gotten a couple toys there. I've got, like, a NECA Rambo figure because I love First Blood. It's a movie that I discovered more recently. I had seen the sequels as a kid, like, on TV and stuff, but I'd never seen the first one. And I think that's one of Sylvester Stallone's best of all time. And I think he's actually a really underrated actor, but that's kind of for another podcast, I guess. But I did get, there's a company called Funko, and they do a variety of different things. If you're kind of vaguely familiar with collectible toys, like stuff you would see at like FYE or Hot Topic or anything, they do what's called pop vinyls, which are kind of like large-headed figures with kind of big round eyes. They do everybody. They've got like 150 licenses or something, the woman told me when I walked through at Toy Fair a couple weeks ago. I have a couple. I think I have a Hal Jordan somewhere, or maybe that's a stuffed one, and then I've got like a Jason Voorhees here. But they do these little blind box minifigure things, and these are kind of like vinyl toys. And what a blind box is, if you're not familiar, is it's literally a box, and all the boxes are the same in the case, so you don't actually know which one you're getting. And on the side, it shows you all the different possibilities. The one that I went for, because I'm a big horror fan, it's called Horror Mystery Minis. Now, these are probably 2.5-3 inches tall, and they're pretty cool. And, you know, they're a couple bucks, so I figured I would get one because I've never gotten one before. And I actually wound up getting Jason Voorhees from the Friday the 13th movies, who I really like. So he's up here on my desk. I got a little collection of Jasons going. It's pretty fun. But this guy has older toys, newer toys, a lot of wrestling stuff. I think they're involved in getting wrestlers to appear and do signings kind of in this area and whatnot. So that was neat. I got that. I also got a trade that I've been looking for a while. Kurt Busiek and Brent Anderson's Astro City through Open Doors. I'm not done with it yet because I've been kind of taking it slowly. I really like Astro City. It's a book that's Kurt Busiek created it with Brent Anderson, and then Alex Ross helps him out with character designs and covers. And this book started in the 90s. I think it was an Image book or something. And it's gone through a couple different publishers, I believe. But it's neat because it's a place called Astro City, which has superheroes of all manner. It's kind of like his own version of like the DC Universe or the Marvel Universe, but it's just him and Anderson and sometimes Alex Ross writing and drawing the whole thing. Like, so it's a superhero universe, but he chooses different characters to focus on at different times. And often he goes for, like, the most human stories possible. A lot of people try to figure out, like, why does Superman fly or what makes the heat vision? This isn't that kind of story. This is more like what makes Superman tick, but it's not really Superman. it's you know, his own character, but it doesn't feel like ripoff characters. A lot of times when people kind of do their own superhero universes, they instantly go for analogs to existing heroes. Those are here. There's a Superman type character, Batman type character, Wonder Woman type character. And in some cases, that's all you get. It's like, oh yeah, that's Superman type character. In this case, he kind of offers these archetypes to readers and then kind of really gets in there and changes up who they are and what they're about. Like I said, this has been going on since the 90s, but there's not a ton of volumes. I think I have most of them. I want to say Family Album is the first one, or is it Welcome to Astro City? Let's see. It's probably in here. Oh, right. It's called Life in the Big City. That's the first one. And then there's Confession, which I don't have. That's about the Batman type character. And then Family Album, Tarnished Angel, Local Heroes. Two books called Dark Ages and or The Dark Age that are set back in the past, and Shining Stars, which is a couple like one-shots and like two-issue miniseries all collected together. And so it's cool because he'll take like one character and kind of focus on them. But meanwhile, there's all these big crazy things going on, and it's just a neat look at the superhero genre. It's something that Busiek has done throughout his career, but I think he's doing it best with Astro City. Like, I read an Amazing Spider-Man he did in the 90s at some point, and it was about two brothers, and one brother was good and one brother was bad, and something with Spider-Man. And that's basically what all of the Dark Age stories are about. One brother was good, one brother was bad, and kind of how their lives went, and then how the greater Astro City world was kind of working around them. And it's neat because if you do read these things like one after the other or in close proximity, or if you have like a really good memory, which I don't, you'll notice that like a character mentioned here will show up in the past, and then maybe you'll get a focus issue later on. So it's a really neat book. He just started it again last year or 2 years ago, I want to say. And so this is the first trade from that. There's one after this called Victory, I believe. So I'm excited to get back into it. The neat thing about these issues is usually I like to sit down with the trade and just bang it out. Read, 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 read. But since these are almost like short stories or vignettes kind of things, I like to kind of read it quickly, but just like the one or two issues in the arc, and then let it sit for a while. And then kind of go back to it. It's not something I read through very quickly, which is not what happens very often. But so I got that. That was kind of a tangent. But I do highly recommend, if you're even remotely interested in comics, I think Astro City is a pretty good place to kind of start, especially if you're a little leery of getting into something like a Marvel or superhero title that has, you know, hundreds of issues or various volumes, that kind of thing. This is pretty straightforward. And I think a really solid and probably different than you're used to take on superheroes. But anyway, so I got that trade. I've been kind of looking forward to it, and I'd seen it there before, but there was another one that I really wanted to get last time and the time before that. So it's neat because every time I go to this one part that has trades, they're $5, which I love. There's always like one book that I really want to get, and then one that I'm like, maybe next time I'll get you. So, you know, I spent $10 and got that, and then that and the little toy, and then Lucy got her thing. And it was nice to get out because, you know, Jack doesn't get out very often, because either my mom or I will take Lucy to school, and then my mom or I will go pick her up. So, you know, there's not a lot of occasion for Jack to get out. And it wasn't super cold or snowy that day, so it was kind of nice to get out. But, you know, this week has been tough. This project that my wife has been working on is just a killer. They got, like, an extension. There were some problems, but they're still, you know, busting their butts to try and get it in to the, you know, whatever, this week. Hopefully today. This is Thursday. I don't know. I hope so, because it's pretty much like she's just kind of staying here. you know, nothing, which is not a slight against her at all. I know she's busy and has all this stuff to do, but it's like, you know, she comes home late, eats something a little bit, goes and puts Jack down, and then comes down and works on her computer for a while. And it's like, okay. And then I've been getting tired really early lately. Falling asleep between 10 and 10:30 almost every night, even earlier over the weekend, because, you know, the pull-out couch is in our downstairs living room. And so I went up stairs, and there's nothing really to do. We don't even have any, like, comfortable chairs. So Friday I went to bed at, like, 9:30. I couldn't believe it, but I was out. And I actually got to sleep in our bed because Em's mom let Lucy sleep with her down here. And it was just, it was nice to get up there and get some solid Z's, but I still feel exhausted. I've been getting more sleep than I have in a long time. But it's just been tough. I mean, the sleeping arrangements, I've basically just moved down into the office where I'm recording this right now. There's a futon. I sleep on that. And, except for those two nights that her parents were here. So that's been, you know, it's not optimal because I don't like the fact that, you know, we're not sleeping in the same bed. But on the other hand, I'm not having to get up at 3 o'clock and move my daughter or fight with her about where she's going to sleep. And I know this is like sticking your head in the sand, but I'm getting the rest I need. She's getting the rest she needs. And, you know, unfortunately, my wife and Jack are the wild cards because he keeps her up to varying degrees at night. But, you know, me being there wouldn't help in that anyway. So we're just kind of getting by. that's kind of where we're at with that. I do want to say that even though as much as I complained about the snow and I'm ready for the winter to be over, it has been really pretty here. From the back of our house, we can see a mountain, which right now when it's snow covered looks awesome. There's no doubt about that. And when it starts kind of snowing here, it's very pretty because we have a really big back and front yard. So we get kind of like a widescreen view of what's going on. And I don't know if it was Sunday or Monday, but I was upstairs in the kitchen and I looked out and I could see like two deer hanging out. We've got a couple trees kind of over down and to the right, like on the property line with our neighbors. And I was like, oh, cool. And so I grabbed our nice camera and I went down. We actually have stairs that go down the back of the kitchen to the backyard. It's the only door in the back of the house. So I went down there and I just opened the main door and left the storm door closed, and I was able to snap some pictures. And then after that, I came back up and went out on this little catwalk thing that we have out the back of our house also, and I was able to get some shots and some video of them that way. So it was kind of neat. I mean, I know deer are giant pains, and we're going to hate them when we start having like a garden, anything like that, but it's pretty neat to be able to look out and see that kind of stuff. Out the backyard. I also want to go back, you know, I know I get into this habit of kind of complaining and then going back and saying some positive things. One positive thing that I do want to note about the job stuff is that, yes, I'm missing the money of not having that job. But I'm trying to utilize my time really well. For one of the other outlets I write for, I actually got a recent pay increase, which was awesome. It's the kind of thing when you do this freelance thing, you never know if that's going to happen because these companies don't always have the biggest budget for, you know, kind of the website portion of what they're doing, or they're a smaller company that just does the website and you know, the money is iffy. And it's not much. Like I said, the fact that this one thing is about half of my income, and now that that's gone, is rough. But what I'm trying to do is take on even more stories. It's not going to make up for it. I would have to get something like 10 more stories done a month, which I'm not. It's not like there's even 10 stories for me to do. But between the two outlets that I mainly write for, I'm taking on a lot of stuff and trying to get through them, and I feel like I'm doing a pretty good job. But the other thing that I want to do now that I have this kind of time open, theoretically, is I want to finish my graphic novel project that I've been working on. I'm up to page like 130-something in the script. I'm aiming for 180 pages, basically because that's what Scott Pilgrim did. if you're not familiar with Scott Pilgrim, it's a kind of a manga-sized graphic novel series that Brian Lee O'Malley did. I mean, starting in the mid to early 2000s, I think. I didn't start reading it when it came out. I kind of read them all later on as they got closer to the end. And they're from Oni. The only reason I bring the comparison up is because that's my main experience. I mean, I'm not even thinking of like a series or anything, but like I don't have a lot of experience with graphic novels. So that was kind of, I looked at the first volume and I thought, okay, 180 pages, that's my goal. At some point, I might have to break it up into issues or whatever, but I figured I would just get the raw material on the page, literally the notebook page as I write by hand, and then kind of figure it out from there. So I'm hoping that with this morning work commitment, I can either do my work earlier and then circle back around and definitely have time to work on those kinds of projects, or I can just do it in the morning when I would have done the other stuff. I'm probably going to lean towards the former just because I feel weird writing my own projects if I have stuff that I'm like putting to the side that I'm actually being paid for. So I think what I'll do is, and what I've been doing is just kind of start earlier with my regular work, get my emails out of the way, write anything I need to, send out questions, figure out like who I'm interviewing, all that kind of stuff. Do that first and then kind of have time a little bit later to get going on this kind of stuff. I'm also hoping that I can use some of that time to get back on the horse, get caught up on photo diaries, which I haven't done, and also get more posts up on the blogs. As you may have noticed with kind of the tangent I took talking about Astro City on here, I do kind of want to get into a little bit more of the pop side of Pop Papa and maybe throw out some comic book and movie suggestions for parents, not just kid stuff, but I will still do the kid stuff. Speaking of which, wow, that was a really good segue and I didn't even plan it. We finally saw Big Hero 6. This is a movie that my kid has been wanting to see from day one. I've been very curious about it because it's technically based on a comic book. You know, when Disney bought Marvel, whenever, a couple years ago, the big question was like, is Pixar going to start doing comic book movies? I would love to see my dream project in that vein is for Pixar to do a Fantastic Four movie set in the 60s, like when the Fantastic Four actually came out. Now, I know that's totally not going to happen because Fantastic Four is another thing, although I don't know if animation is its own project or what, but to me, that's like a great project. I love the idea of doing some of these superhero movies in the style or the look of the era that they came out in. You could do it with Spider-Man, you could do it with Fantastic Four, those were all in the 60s. You could do some really cool stuff with the 70s Marvel heroes. There were so many wacky, wild characters coming out at that point that would really be fun to kind of see kind of done in a little bit more of a like a gritty 70s style. Now, I know this probably is never going to happen, but that's just a dream that I've had for a little while. But Big Hero 6 is the first thing to actually come out. Now, this is a comic. I've never read it. It's like they had one appearance in Alpha Flight, and then they had their own miniseries. I've interviewed the guy that created it a couple times, not about that, about his creator-owned work. And, you know, it's just kind of a random thing. But they're also, the guys that helped create that are big in animation. So I don't know if that helped kind of build some bridges in that regard. But the basic idea of the movie is that it's set in a place called San Francisco. And they don't explain this in the movie. I don't think it needs to be explained, but I thought this was interesting. The idea is that after the big earthquake in San Francisco, the Japanese immigrants rebuilt it, which is why there's so much Japanese influence on everything. So that's just a cool little bit of info. But it's also like a super high-tech city and world. So this young guy named Hiro is hanging out with his older brother who works at a university where everybody's working on some cool projects, and something happens to the brother, and Hiro winds up teaming up with the kind of nurse robot that his brother built to find out what happened. And I don't want to get into too many details. There was a twist that I did not see coming. We kind of were discussing who we thought it might be during the movie, and then were surprised, which I liked. That doesn't happen too often, especially with a kids movie. But, you know, along the way, Hiro teams up with his brother's friends from the university, and they all kind of get their own, like, cool superhero thing, and then they go off and, you know, save the day. There's some really neat moments in there. It is a little scary. I wasn't sure if Lucy was going to like a couple of the parts, but she doesn't seem too bothered by that kind of stuff, which is great. I haven't gotten into the extra features yet, although they do look pretty cool. I know there's one that kind of goes through and points out some of the different stuff that you can see in the movie. I think I did a quick post about this on my blog where, you know, you can see some Frozen stuff. There's a statue of Prince Hans that gets exploded. There's a little statue of Olaf that there's no way you would normally see unless you knew exactly when to pause it. And then there's like a ship from Arendelle in the port of San Francisco, which I thought was kind of neat. But it's by the people that have made the last few Disney animated movies. I should note, this isn't Pixar. When I talked about Pixar before, that was just what I thought as soon as I heard that this movie, or that Disney bought Marvel. Anyway, a couple of the other Disney CGI projects, people put this together, the people that did Wreck-It Ralph and Frozen, and I love both those movies, even though I've seen them a million times, which just goes to show how actually good they are. And I think that they just kind of keep upping their game, and I like that they're doing stories that are challenging. They're not super simple. They're even a little complicated, I would say. Like, my wife and I actually talked about some of the timeline stuff from the movie because we weren't quite sure when various things happened. And that might just be because we're watching with kids and things are happening and people are asking questions and talking and all that kind of stuff. But it was a really neat movie. My buddy Justin says it's his favorite superhero movie of last year. I still think I personally like Guardians of the Galaxy better, but Lucy really loved it. And so that one is fun and definitely gets a thumbs up. Another movie that I want to talk about that is not for kids at all is Guillermo del Toro's Cronos. It's the very first movie he ever did. It's in Spanish because, you know, he's from Mexico. He shot it there. And it's a really crazy, cool movie. I'm not as familiar with his movies as I'd like to be. So I'm kind of going back to the beginning and going through. I'll probably do a post about this on UnitedMonkey.com. Next week, I'm hoping if I can kind of get back on schedule with that kind of stuff. But it's a really interesting story about an old man who finds this scarab machine, basically, that kind of latches into him and kind of turns him into a zombie vampire thing that can live forever. A lot of other stuff's going on, but I thought there was some interesting moments between him and his granddaughter, which is very similar, obviously, to the father-daughter relationship that I'm pretty much always looking for in movies like this or anything, that I thought was nice and kind of added an interesting layer to this story that's basically about, you know, you don't see horror movies that are about an old man and a little girl very often, unless the one is going after the other, which is not the case here. But, you know, it's kind of a challenging movie. It's got Ron Perlman in it, though, which is nice to kind of, like, you see and recognize somebody, but there's a lot of back and forth. There's some craziness. There's some gross special effects. You know, this isn't a movie that I don't think I'm blowing too many minds when I say that it's a good movie, but it is his first attempt at, you know, doing a film, and I thought it was really good, and I highly recommend. If you're interested in kind of his work or just like really solid, interesting horror material, it's a good one to watch. It's also interesting because I have seen a few of his movies. I mean, he did Pacific Rim and the Hellboy movies, and he wrote The Strain with Chuck Hogan, and I read the first book of that, and it was just kind of interesting to see this early creative endeavor of his and how many pieces of it can be seen in his other movies. I know bugs are kind of a big thing. He did Mimic, too, which might be his most well-known movie here, aside from maybe Hellboy, although Pacific Rim's huge, so never mind. But that was a big one in the 90s that came out. That is on Netflix. I'm going to see it. I heard it's been cut to death, and it's not really a movie that he likes that his name is on, but, you know, there it is. But, you know, bugs are a theme. Obviously, older people dealing with death is a theme. Even something as simple as, like, two things that I noticed from The Strain is that the main character in the movie is antiques dealer who doesn't know that he has this super special, like, thing inside of a statue, this scarab. In The Strain, Abraham is one of the main characters, and he runs, like, a pawn shop, which is just kind of a front so that he can collect, like, vampire killing materials. So, I mean, they're not the same, but I thought that was an interesting parallel. Old men with like, junk stores doing better, kind of the heroes. That's a theme in his work. And then the other one that I noticed, is the idea of, like, a person, a very wealthy, powerful person who is sick and trying to be immortal. That's in both of these. Like, that one's an even bigger parallel as far as I'm concerned. But I think it's interesting when you look at kind of an artist's work and see some of the different materials and some of the things, some of the themes and ideas that they kind of stick on and keep coming back to over and over again. Because, I mean, he did Cronos in the mid-90s, I think, and then, you know, The Strain was written in the 2000s, so there's a lot of time there in between, and I know he deals with kids a lot, I've only seen Pan's Labyrinth once, but I know it's about a kid, a little girl also, and I think Devil's Backbone might also have something, but I've never seen anything about that. So it's just interesting to kind of see how they work and evolve some of these ideas while still going back to very similar themes. But I do recommend that if you're kind of a horror fan. It's not super gory and gross, but it's definitely creepy and has like a good atmosphere to it. I also want to talk about comics for a little bit. There will be more posts specifically about this stuff on poppapa.com as they come. But I did want to say I was at the library with my daughter, and I picked up a couple trades that I'm excited about reading with her. As I always suggest, I read them first, and then we'll read them with her when the time pops up. It's just some of these take a while, and so it hasn't happened yet. But one of them is a graphic novel by a guy named Jordan Crane. It's called The Clouds Above. It's a Fantagraphics book. I think it came out in 2005. This is a really neat book because it's kind of like a square hardcover. There is also a soft cover. But each page is one panel. So it's almost like a storybook, but it's, you know, a long-form comic. It's like 200-something pages. So you go through, and it's about a boy and his giant cat, and they go on crazy adventures. They're trying to go to school, but they can't get in. They've got a really mean teacher, so they go up to the roof, and they found a door that has a secret staircase that goes up to the clouds, and on the way up, they, you know, get in a fight with some birds, and they meet a cloud that's nice, and then they meet some storm clouds that are not nice, and it's just kind of a surreal, but still kind of grounded adventure. In a lot of ways, it's like Adventure Time. I don't know. I feel like I compare a lot of things to Adventure Time. But in this sense, I think it's got a similar tone in that, you know, it's kind of two wisecracking friends going on an adventure. It also, I mean, look-wise, it is a young boy and his large yellow talking animal friend, which, you know, works for both. So, but in the book, he's not a shapeshifter or anything like that. And their personalities are fairly different, but it's still kind of similar. But yeah, it was a neat book. I haven't read it to Lucy yet, but I left it out. And she has definitely kind of looked at it and perused it a little bit. And I've, you know, she'll sit there and look through it. And so I definitely think she's going to like it. And that's one of the reasons I haven't actually posted about it yet, is because I do want to sit down and read it with her. But the other book that we've gotten that's been kind of similarly handled is Littlest Pet Shop book from IDW. I didn't even realize that Littlest Pet Shop comics existed. And they look like they were basically taken from the show. It's pretty crazy, and they look fantastic. They've got that style and those really pretty eyes that I've mentioned a couple times. Again, we haven't read those yet, but I assume they're pretty much right in line with the show and all that. And she seemed pretty excited about that. So I'm looking forward to getting into those. For myself, I have been really going into three series lately. That is Dan Slott's Amazing Spider-Man, which has been going for a few years now. Jason Aaron's Wolverine and the X-Men, and Mike Mignola and Company's Hellboy. Now, Hellboy is, I guess I've mentioned it, so it's kind of a theme. Again, it's another indie book, kind of like Busiek's Astro City, but it's more supernatural and folklore-based and all that kind of stuff. Hellboy is he's an actual kind of demon, but he's not a bad guy. He just was conjured up, and he runs around and goes on adventures. And then throughout the second half, there's more of a straight-ahead through storyline that's being dealt with that I'm kind of getting to. I love this book. I didn't really know about it from experience until I got to Wizard. I'd read about it, but I was pretty cautious about buying new things and trying new stuff before I got there, because, you know, my income was pretty low, and, you know, I knew that I liked Superman, and I didn't know if I'd like this other thing, but I would read about it in Wizard, and I loved Wizard, which is why I got the internship there. Once I got there, I had access to the library, and, you know, read a bunch of them and really liked it, kind of fell in love with it. Mignola, who is the writer on all the Hellboy stuff and the artist on about half of it, maybe more at this point, I'm not quite sure, I'm pretty far behind. He just does an amazing job going through and finding these like crazy folktales from all over the world and then bringing them into this own mythos that he's been building in Hellboy all these years. There's also the spinoff book BPRD, which has way, way more volumes than I ever even realized. and I've got like 14 on my shelf, and I'm not even close. I think I'm halfway there with Hellboy between I think my birthday and getting some extra money, I was able to get all the ones that are out up till now, because there's probably 13 or 14 of those total. But so I've been really enjoying going through those. Dan Slott's Spider-Man is just some of the best superhero comics I've read in a long time. And I know kind of where it's going a little bit, but Spider-Man's a character that I've always loved not in comics. I loved the cartoon growing up. I have a ton of toys. I've watched at least a few episodes of all the cartoons that have come after that. I liked the first movie. I did not like the second movie. Did not like the third movie. I actually liked Amazing Spider-Man, and I haven't seen Amazing Spider-Man 2, and I don't really plan to. But it's just a character that, you know, when I would talk to people, it was like, what's a good Spider-Man story? Tell me one good Spider-Man story to read. And there, I didn't get many solid answers. It was like, oh, go back and read the original. Well, at the time, I wasn't interested in reading, you know, Silver Age comics because they're pretty goofy. I've since kind of changed my opinion a little bit on that, though. Honestly, a lot of them are goofy. But I had heard great things about this, and I know, I mean, we're going back 4 or 5 years now to the beginning, or not even the beginning, but this big time storyline, which kind of changed the status quo and started getting into some interesting stuff. And it's just been a joy to read. I'm through Spider Island. I've got 3 trades sitting here ready to go. And Dan Slott just does this amazing thing of kind of capturing the essence of Peter Parker and Spider-Man that I know from those other things that I mentioned, bringing in elements of existing continuity, but without making them impossible for me to understand. Because that's the other thing. I mean, we're talking about a character that was created in the early to mid-60s. That's a lot of stories to go through. Even this, even reading his stuff, is a little tricky because there was a thing called One More Day when I was still at Wizard. And it was this thing that made Spider-Man made a deal with the devil, and that made everybody forget that he was Spider-Man, including his wife, Mary Jane Watson, so that he could save the life of his, like, 90-year-old grandma, which, I mean, at every level is a stupid story. It was basically a way for Marvel to undo Spider-Man telling everybody his secret identity in an event called Civil War. You know, they said it was a bad mistake to make. I think One More Day was an awful story, poorly done from a story perspective. And then after that, you know, at that point, there had been a ton of different Spider-Man books, like 4 or 5. They called them all down to Amazing Spider-Man, and then they had a rotating cast of writers, including Dan Slott and then like 2 or 3 other guys. And I didn't quite go back all the way to that, because I didn't want to read all these other stories. I don't care. I did try to read a book called Life and Death or something with that in it. And it was like all about Anti-Venom and some other guy, and I just didn't care. But I think if you go back and start from Spider-Man Big Time and go through, you're not going to be sorry, because I think it's one of the best, you know, runs I've ever read. It reminds me of how passionate I felt about Green Lantern after I started reading Geoff Johns' run on that book and Ed Brubaker's run on Captain America. Like, those are two that I think are up there. Or Scott Snyder's run on Batman, which is still going on. I think all of those are just, like, amazing takes on characters that I love in one way or another, done in ways that just really get me excited about kind of where they're going. And I know he's still on the book. There's all kinds of events and stuff going on. So eventually I'll get caught up. And I'm looking forward to that. But it's fun to kind of have a lot of stuff to be excited about. Luckily, my library has a lot of them that I've got on hold. I've got the kind of list figured out. And then I've also been using the Marvel Unlimited app, which if you have, definitely if you have an iPad, I would recommend, or like a larger tablet. It's a little difficult to deal with on a phone, but in a pinch, it's nice. You can also read them on your computer, too. That's a digital service, kind of like Netflix, that you sign up for. You pay whatever a month, and then you just have access to the comics. You don't download them or keep them, but you just read them. And that's been a great tool for me to get through some of the holes that I have. And then the other book that I mentioned is called Wolverine and the X-Men. This one, you've got to go back a little bit. There was an event called Schism where Cyclops and Wolverine had a big fight. They split. And then Wolverine came back and restarted the School for Gifted Youngsters, but now it's the Jean Grey School. And the neat thing about this book, I'm not a huge X-Men fan. I read it here and there. But what I like about this book is that it's a really awesome mix of interesting old and new characters in these different, and they're also taking on like different roles. Wolverine's the headmaster of the school, and Kitty Pryde, who some people know, some people don't, is the headmistress, and Beast is there. And then there's some younger characters that have been kind of popping up here and there for, you know, years that are the students. And sometimes when you're reading a comic, like a teen hero comic, the stories start feeling very similar. I've kind of realized that if you're a young person reading comics, you have like one teen book that's coming out at the time that you start reading or you know, in that era that you really fall for. Back in the day, it was Teen Titans. It's been New X-Men, you know, in the 80s. It's been, Teen Titans again at different points. For me, it was Gen 13. But the problem is that if you've read those stories already, then new teen books can feel very similar because it's a lot of the same stuff. It's like, oh, is she going to date him? Is he going to dump her? Does he like him? All this stuff over and over again. And it's like, okay, you know, I've seen this. And it's not that one is copying the other, but that's, you know, those are the basics of high school stories. In this case, what I appreciate is that it weaves throughout the staff down to the students. There's interaction. There's big events kind of happening at the same time. And so it's a neat, and it's really funny. I mean, Jason Aaron is a writer more known for like hardcore, like Vertigo type books. He's got Scalped, which I've read a few of, and that's intense. I think he does a book called Southern Bastards. So real tough stuff, but this is actually like fun and at times lighthearted, but also serious when it needs to be. And so I think that's a really good book. It's also, it might sound boring because it's set around a school and talks about teachers, but like in the second volume, there's a really interesting and fun way that Wolverine gets funding for the school. You know, you think, oh gosh, am I going to have to read about funding for a school for like arcs and arcs? And no, he goes to a planet, gambles a bunch, and walks away with a ton of money that he then uses to fund the school. So there you go. It's a problem that could have lasted forever. It gets taken care of in a fun and quick way, and there you go. And I don't read a ton of books, so these are the kinds of things that I'm absorbing and watching and getting into right now. And so that's what I'm going to talk about. I'm trying to get into, like I said, a little bit more review type stuff and just kind of let you guys know what I'm also listening to, reading, watching, and that kind of stuff, in addition to all of the kids stuff. And back to the kids stuff, you know, it's been a fine week. I know it's tough on them because their mom's not here, and it's tough on me because she's not here. But, you know, we're doing well. Jack's kind of getting better at just being. I mean, we look at some of our friends on Facebook or just, you know, family members or whatever who have kids about the same age. And it's like, well, he's not doing a lot of the same stuff they are. But you also got to remember that he spent almost the first month of his life in a hospital. And he also wasn't supposed to, well, I don't like to use the word supposed to, but he was originally intended to cook for another 2 months. And while I don't think that's had any like big time adverse effects, it is something to keep in. And I really don't like to think about it, not because it makes me feel sad or anything, though it does, but more so because, like, I don't want to treat him differently because he was born early. I'm going to treat him the way that I treat him because that's how I interact with him. If he's not walking yet, he's not walking yet. I want him to walk or crawl or do anything in that way, even though I say that now, but as soon as he does, we're going to have to put gates up and plug covers and the whole nine. But you know, he's going to go at the pace that he goes at. As long as he's, you know, developmentally, you know, on point in other ways, you know, we're just happy with how he is. But, you know, he's smart. I know that he's starting to understand the signs that we do for, like, more and food and that kind of stuff. He's not doing them, but he knows what they mean. And there's a couple other ways that we've been trying to communicate with him that work well. So the key one, and one that I do want to mention, isn't one in a book that I've read, but it is something that I remember Lucy catching on to and then me eventually catching on to her catching on to it. And that is, you know, you can't always be in the same room with a baby. And sometimes they freak out when they realize that you're gone. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes you walk away and they're still playing with their toy and they don't care. They don't even notice that you are gone. But I have noticed that a key thing, and this is, I don't know if it works if you're not doing signs in general, but, and we're not doing a ton. We're basically just doing eat, you know, breastfeed, more, all done. And then this one, which is, I'll be back in 1 minute. And all it is just holding up a hand or a finger, you know, one finger. It's super simple. But what I think it does, obviously they don't know what 1 minute or 1 second or any of that stuff means, but they see you doing that, making eye contact with them and connecting for a second, which, and then doing the thing that they know that when you do that, you're going to come back quickly. And so I think that's worked out really well. And I make sure when I'm getting up, I go, Jackie, and he'll kind of look up at me, and I'll be back in 1 second, okay? And he doesn't respond in any way, but he's, more often than not, he's okay with that. And he's cool with you kind of walking away for a little bit. Sometimes he'll scream anyway, but I mean, he's a baby, that's going to happen. So that's kind of my tip of the day. I also do recommend trying to do the sign language thing. I mean, you don't have to do a ton of stuff, but the food ones are very, very good, and they can be very helpful once the kid starts doing them. And Lucy still does more when she doesn't even realize she's doing it sometimes. That's you kind of put all your fingers together in a point, and then on both hands, and then touch them together. So that one worked out well. We have a couple different books, but it's because like we got one, and then somebody else gave us another one, and then we've got flashcards and all this stuff. I don't think you need to really get into it that much. But it does help if you will learn, like, if you have a dog, you learn dog or cat or brother or sister or grandma or grandpa. Mom and dad didn't really do much with us, but that's because Lucy kind of started saying those early. And we think Jack is saying mama. He's just going, ah, mama, 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 and sometimes he's screaming it. So we think that's specifically for her. And that's the other thing. Sometimes you just realize that they're doing something in reference to something else, and you've got to catch on. I mean, you can try teaching them as much as you want, but, you know, sometimes things sneak up on you. Like, I can't remember what it was, but I know that Lucy developed her own sign for the cat, and it took us months to figure out what it was. Or maybe she was saying something. I do remember her having some sort of thing for the cat, and then it took us a very long time to figure out what she was doing. And then one day I just kind of saw it, and I was like, oh, duh, she's been trying to mention or signify the cat. That's crazy. Good for her. So, you know, once you start kind of communicating to them in that way, they kind of understand that it is a way in which they can communicate, which is good. So I recommend trying to do the sign language thing. You don't have to go full boat and figure out all the signs for things. Like, I mean, I know the sign for turtle because I used to take sign language class as a kid, but you're probably not going to need that unless you have a turtle. So, you know, keep it simple, keep it to the things that they like. And then if they really catch on, you can kind of learn some more from that. You really only have to keep one step ahead of them. And sometimes the flashcards are the best way to go. So that's my tip of the day. With that, I'm going to sign off. My name is TJ Deitch. This is the Pop Pop and Napcast. You can check out show notes and links to all the things that I talked about on this week's episode over there. It's poppapa.com, poppapa.com. These will be in the episode 94 show notes if you're listening to this on iTunes or through your phone or whatever. I also do a pop culture blog called United Monkey, which is monkee.com. If you're looking for more reviews on comic books, things like that, movies, that aren't necessarily parent-related or adjacent, I should say, head on over there, and you can see all kinds of stuff. I am also on Twitter at Papa Deitch, which is P-O-P-P-A-D-I-E-T-S-C-H. And I do want to let you know that I am hoping to kind of do a little bit of a shift in the podcast. I got into some non-kid-related reviews this time. I'm also looking to figure out a way to do guests on here. I did do the Christmas podcast with my friend Brett, and I'm hoping to do more episodes of Pop Papa Napcast with my friends who are also parents. So be on the lookout for that. I'm getting close to the big 100th episode. I can't believe I've been doing this that long. And so hopefully by then I will kind of have a better idea of where I'm going with all this. But until then, I'm TJ Deitch, and have a good one.